B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
In that kind of situation, how do you handle that? How do you deal with it? How do you address them? How do you avoid that happening again?
Yeah, I think I don't want to be misunderstood when I make that statement. What I mean by it, they want it more. There were certain plays in that game where obviously they made the play we didn't. So in that case, yeah, they wanted that play a little bit more than we did. As a whole, as a game, the effort, the energy level, all that was there. You know, in the game, playing tough, guys played hurt in the game and went back in the game. So it's none of that. It's the fact that there were plays to be made in that game. We didn't make them. They wanted that aspect of the game just a touch more. They made those plays and ultimately came out on top.
You said after the game that you did not consider calling a timeout on the big field goal trick play.
Correct.
What's the downside to calling a timeout in that spot?
The downside?
Yes.
Probably nothing, you know. The fact that, you know, they could still come out with another formation, another opportunity, you know. They could. That was one of the things that, you know, understanding this coordinator and where he's been and this team and, you know, are there unscouted trick plays? That's why they're called trick plays for a reason, because they're unscouted, right? And gadget-type plays. And so are there those plays that every team has? Yes, there are, and they work on them throughout the course of the year. You burn a timeout there, sure. Okay, that might negate that one, but it doesn't, you know, still say they don't line up and try something again in that situation.
And that's why I was curious there, because a lot of these plays, you see it out of the normal formation. When you see the formations different, you made the conscious decision just to keep playing?
I watched the film again this morning, and we had everybody covered up. We broke the formation. We aligned up where we were supposed to align, and we just came off of the guy that caught the touchdown. That's the bottom line. So, you know, it's something that Coach Fitt puts our guys through every week. He goes back and researches as much as he can the history of those coordinators and the teams that have run those special type plays and prepares our team for those moments.
Do you think they run a play?
They could easily run another play, maybe not that specific play, or even if you call a timeout right there, okay, they could still break the formation and line up exactly the same way. We don't know what they were going to run, right, because the play didn't show. So, you know, it kind of goes either way that way.
When you look at penalties, many of those, you know, that offset positive plays, what's the big picture assessment of why those are happening the way they are?
It's unfortunate that they do happen. It came in bunches yesterday. I think 10 penalties there, 4 of which gave them first downs, you know, to stay on the field from their offense or, you know, situation. I look at the other side. We had some critical penalties on offense in critical moments. I think we had a holding call early in the game. We had a false start on a 4th-and-2 that we had to settle for a field goal. You know, so there was enough in this game that, and then you go back a week before where we had 2 penalties. So, you know, my question is why? And some of it comes down to, you know, lack of focus, just understanding the situation sometimes. You know, all things that we try not to use as excuses, because we have to eliminate that and get better and learn from them and move on.
How confident are you in the leadership of this team? You know, it's the 3rd straight loss, and everything's out there. So obviously, everything upset, but, you know, the leaders on this team have to be under.
This will be where this team is. This will be great for our leadership right now, where we are. From my standpoint, leading the football team and then challenging the leaders of the team, to really embrace this time and to really challenge the guys and say, hey, you know, we've got four games left and a month of this season, and by no means are we we're not throwing in the towel. We got a lot of football left. We got a great opportunity. There's still a chance, you know, for us. We control our own destiny, and so that's going to be the message moving forward to this football team, and the leaders have to embrace that, and they have to also take it to the team as well. So I feel really good about that, and those will be the conversations that I have with those guys this week.
Was that not the approach before?
It's been the approach we're just talking about right now. So yeah, leading up to that, it's always been that same approach.
Do you make any coaching changes this week?
No. We've got time to deal with that, so I mean, obviously we'll take a look, but as of right now, today, sitting here at 12:03, no.
So you don't think a shakeup is in order?
A shakeup. And I know what you're saying. You're talking about sending a message. No, I don't. I mean, everything that is, it's all self-inflicted. It's all, even the plays that they made, our players were in position to make those plays. We just didn't. They executed, we didn't. And so that to me doesn't deserve any kind of shakeup. I would think if you're, you know, no, it doesn't.
You talked about the challenge for the leadership this week. Have you seen maybe behind the scenes the reaction you wanted from the players?
I think everybody handles it, you know, controversy a little bit different. I mean, if it takes screaming and shouting at each other, maybe. If it takes, out at practice, coach, let's repeat this play. We made a mistake. Let's get it right, you know, or getting in a player-to-player kind of confrontation, getting in somebody's face at practice or during the week. I mean, all those can be constructive if handled the right way, And, I can say certain things here in front of y'all, and then when I address the team, it's a different tone. So there's ways of handling it, and each team is different, but I do believe in our leadership, and I do believe in our players.
Along those lines, what does this team need, and how do you know what it is?
This team needs to continue to work every single day and come to work with the right frame of mind. Check egos at the door. Let's come to work. Let's get ready for the New York Giants. And got another great opportunity this week. And that's the only thing I know to do, is to continue to push, put one foot in front of the other, be hard on our players, demand more of our players, things of that nature, things that we've done all season long. Players got to hold players accountable. All of that stuff we talk about, and get ready for this game.
Doug, a lot of the focus has been on defense from yesterday, but what's the kind of culpability of the offense? Obviously just one touchdown in the second half after productive first half. It's kind of, stop the bleeding.
Well, we had opportunities. We had a mishap, we had a drop pass there in the red zone. That would have been possibly another touchdown there. Again, going back, we had the penalty, false start, things that kind of set us back offensively that allowed us to kind of keep our lead, and it prevented us from keeping the lead. And then you get to a point where you're behind, and then we put ourselves in a position two scores down to we kick the field goal and all that, but it's just execution. And in critical moments, and those are things that I look at as the head coach and calling plays and making sure that I'm putting our players in those situations during the week, because if I don't and it comes up in the game, then that one's on me.
Given what the team has accomplished at the end of the last two seasons going on those runs, do you think it's possible that the team sort of is a little bit comfortable in thinking it is able to just sort of turn on the switch at the end of the season?
I think you can benefit from that, but you just don't turn the switch on in this league. you have to come to work every single day. You got to come ready in the right frame of mind and all that, and you got to prepare and put in the work, just like our guys have done all season long. But I don't think you look up at the end of the day and go, oh, let's wait till December and we'll start playing our best football. I mean, it's got to be a week in and week out thing. And I do think that our guys understand that, though, that they have been able to do that. That's why when you talk about a team that's resilient, they've been through it. You know, they've been tested that way. So that's the hope moving forward, that the guys see it and they embrace it, and we can get that done.
What's the process? One more, please. What's the process you're looking at the game
before the actual game? Jim and I talk throughout the course of the week. Of course, you know, during practice, you know, we get a chance to visit, and I get to see the practice. I've got their calls and everything, and then the dialogue that he and I have during the week to understand the plan and how we're going to attack an opponent.
And what did you think of this game plan? And what was it? I mean, was there anything that was designed specifically to stop Devontae Parker, prepare for that, to prepare for Brian Fitzpatrick?
I mean, outside of just... Yeah, I mean, you think about the way we started this football game, and, I mean, we were doing those things. I mean, we created a turnover on the first play of the game. We were sacking the quarterback. We stopped the run. You know, did all the things that the game plan was designed to do, you know, early in the football game, and even to the point where, you know, we had a 28-14 lead.
What changed that, and how come adjust before
that? I just think what changed, there wasn't a whole lot that changed. If you go back and just watch, I don't know if you rewatched the game, but if you rewatch the game, again, we have guys in position. It's not the calls. It's not the effort of the team. It's not any of that. We're in position. They made the play. We didn't. And that's really what it comes down to. We've got to do our job as far as putting our players in position.
Does that mean they have more talent? Like, if you had the effort and the guys were in position,
I mean, it's not a talent thing. If you've ever played competitive sports in your life, you would know. I mean, there are times when you get beat, and there's times when you win, and we got beat. I mean, we physically got beat yesterday, and we have to accept that. And every player has to look at that. Every coach has to look at that. And what can I do this week to get better from that? How can I maybe be another 6 inches further down the field, or, you know, listen to the snap count a little bit, or whatever it might be, to make those plays in the future.
Yeah, some good questions there for Doug Peterson. Some mystifying answers. I don't know. We'll have to see what it's all about. We'll come back. Give us a phone call, 610-622-0975. Bob Cooney here with Barrett Brooks. Doug Peterson just spoke. Some interesting things there, Barrett. You and I, we're kind of looking at each other.
Whoa.
A little bit. Yeah, so we'll get into it as soon as we get back. Time at the Fanatic is 12:14.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Midday show, Bob Cooney filling in for Anthony Gargano today. I got Barrett Brooks with me. We got Pat Egan behind the glass. Coach Camille is making the rounds, checking in on everybody like he always does. He's the man, the myth, and the legend. And he just told me he knows it. 12 o'clock hour brought to you by Goldenberg's Peanut Chews. Delicious, chewy, chocolatey, bite-sized pieces loaded with crunchy peanuts. Pat, I couldn't say crunchy peanuts there. Loaded with crunchy peanuts.
The real deal.
That came out better that time.
Egan's one of those guys. He loves those things.
Egan, huh? I'm looking at him like, you know, let's have a conversation. He's just giving me evil eye over there. He thinks he's Ty Domi or something from back in the day. Like, he wants to just square off with
Bob,
me.
I don't like you.
That's fine. I understand. But we need to have a working relationship.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead.
This is like T.O. and Donovan.
You stay on that side of the glass and we'll be just fine.
Hey, you know what, man? Speaking of that, man, a lot of that's overrated, man. It is, man. Yeah, I don't need to work with you. I don't need to like you to work with you. You know
what I mean? No, not at all.
You know, and you know, everybody makes, you know, was making a big deal about Carson not getting along with it. Well, hell, I don't care. I mean, I'm just watching Brady cussing somebody out on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't like him for real, for real. They love him because he gets them paid Super Bowl checks. But other than that, they could care less about him. You think he's hanging out with the you know, his minions? No. No.
That Dorsett was driving home last night. Right. Yeah. I mean, he called him out on TV. He says, I can't work with him. I'm done with him.
Right.
The cameras catch him saying, I'm done with him. The cameras catch him going after him, say, you're not explosive. You're not this, that, and the other. You know, you sit there, and I think most of us Philly fans would be like, cool.
Right.
I like that. To see that in my athletes.
But then, you know, a story comes out, oh, Carson doesn't get along with everybody. I don't care about Carson. I tell you the truth, me and Ben did get along. But do you think I lost sleep over it? You think Ben cared about me liking him?
Yeah, right.
All Ben cared about if I came in on the big packages and played, you know, goal line tight end, or if I was protecting his left side, I'm his best friend then.
Yeah.
But if I'm not protecting him on the field and I'm a backup, he could care less about me. I didn't play in his reindeer games.
You know,
he wasn't sending me nothing for Christmas.
No, it is overrated.
You got to work, man. You got to work.
You can't let anybody else know it.
Exactly.
I mean, unfortunately, people know that Egan and I hate each other, but they don't know that we get the job done because, you know, that's what we have to do. All right, so Doug Peterson and Jim and Swarthmore, hold on. I just want to hit on a little bit of Doug, and lines are open after that, 610-632-0975. Interesting press conference. So he's questioned about something that he said about the Dolphins wanted the game more.
I saw your eyes light up.
Wow. Because sometimes I don't know if Doug Peterson knows that he's damning himself. Like some of the things he says, it's like it all, without him saying it all falls on him. He really says, his explanations say that it all falls on me and I'm not doing a good job.
So right, right.
He says, you know, Dolphins wanted it more. Certain plays is what I mean. As a whole, we had effort, energy, you know, that level was the energy level that was there. And then it was like kind of pressed more on. He says, you know, plays were there to be made, but we didn't make them. And then as he kept going on, he was saying, look, we call plays. They were open. We were in the right positions, but we didn't execute. So what did you say to me right as it was done? He was doing what?
He was getting flustered, man. I mean, like, he's letting you know that evidently these guys aren't good enough to make the plays.
There it is right there.
And then you turn around, you show me exactly that on your page. I didn't even say it to you. I mean, I just said it to you. You didn't have to write. You just showed me the book.
I showed you my notebook. I said, look what I wrote down. And I wrote down, basically, he's saying that talent is not good enough. And I put it in capital letters and a box around it. And just as I wrote it, Les Bowen from the Daily News Inquirer looked at him and said, so wait, you're saying the players are there, you're putting them in the right positions, but they're not making plays. Does that mean it's a talent thing? And then he went, the best retract you can do. But look, I don't look at these press guys, and I've been to a million of them. It's hard for coaches to come out and say what they want to say, but not say what they can't say.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's all of that, and we know it's all encompassing, and it's tough. But from the way Doug talked, it kept coming back to that theme, that the talent just isn't good enough.
And when you call a spade a spade. I mean, we all watched the same game he coached. There's no way around the fact that if you look at it, they just weren't good enough at times during the game. Yep. When they were called to be put in a position to be great, they couldn't be great. But when they're called to be in a position that, okay, you go out there and just facilitate it, they're great at that, but not being great. I mean, it's almost like they're scared to be great. Never be scared to be great. And I think that's the problem right there. If you look at the games that won, it paralleled. All of them paralleled the same way. You ran the rock, you kept the ball out of the opposing quarterback's hands, and then you won the game. That's the biggest dynamic that, you know, between winning and losing. And yet we still don't run the ball.
Yeah.
We're winning the game when we're running the rock. We ran the ball 12 times. We're eating up clock. We're pounding them on ball. They can't stop us. When you can't stop somebody, that's demoralizing for a defense. That's demoralizing for a head coach that's calling a defense that you can't stop. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you can't stop them and they're still running it, that's the best way to be. And if you listen to what the offensive line says and what they've been quoted on and the defensive line, what they've been quoted on, the worst thing you can do to a defense is run on them and they can't stop it because now you control the game.
It's almost like a boxer that can't stop a jab that's coming at him all the time in a fight.
Right.
And it's not killing you. It's not knocking you out. I shouldn't say killing. It's not knocking you out. But, man, it's doing its damage. Yeah, you don't want to be there anymore. And it makes you do things you don't want to do. It makes you start throwing haymakers. It makes you start, you know, and that's what the running game does to teams, it
Absolutely.
Appears. And you know better than anybody because you were the big part of that running game. But another couple highlights from what he said. He said, Jeff McClain asked him, is there going to be a shakeup, as in players, is there going to be any shakeup? And Doug kind of hesitated. He said, as of 12:01, as I stand here now, no. And then pressed a little bit further. He said, I know what you're saying. Are we going to make a move? Probably not. He said, as of now, no. Our players were in position but didn't make the plays. Well, again, it seems like you're calling out the talent. And, I don't know of any other way to interpret it. Maybe you do out there. If you do, 610-632-0975. But Barrett and I looked at each other during the whole thing, and Egan also. It sounded like he was kind of throwing players under the bus.
Well,
he talked about bad mistakes, penalties, drops. Yeah, drops, and then that puts us behind, and then we, okay. That's on the players. And then the other thing was, Zach Berman asked him about the trick play that got the touchdown. Why did you not? No, he didn't ask why he didn't. He goes, what was the downside to calling a timeout there when you saw that formation? And I said to Egan right away, I said, that is a terrific question.
By the way, Doug Peterson then proceeded to make Zach's point for him.
Yeah. Oh, he absolutely did.
Like he's going into it, just explaining why it was a dumb decision not to make it, after doubling down, saying, yeah, I would still not call a timeout.
Yeah, at first he said, there is no downside. And it was like, okay, next sentence should be, I should have called a timeout there in hindsight.
Exactly.
And then go to the next question. But he didn't. He said, yeah, there's really not a downside. But they could also, if I do call a timeout, they could have another trick play. And the reason they're trick plays is because they're not scouted, right? And it's like, whoa, 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 wait, what? If you call a timeout and bring your team over, say, hey, that package, let's go, man. If you're in doubt, throw somebody to the ground. I don't know. I'm just like.
That makes too
what
much,
do I know?
Coon, that makes too much sense, man. That makes too much sense. You know, call a timeout and just say, all right, you're responsible. This guy, this guy, this guy. If they come out something else, you're still responsible for that guy.
Or we'll call a zone. We'll call this. I mean, how is a timeout not? So anyway, that was baffling. And Doug Peterson tried to explain it, but I'm not sure he did a great job of doing it.
Then I got confused because then he started talking about, maybe I'm not smart enough, but he said, this is great for us. This is great for leadership. It's great for our leaders on the team. And I'm thinking to myself, what?
When is a loss to a horrible team ever good for you?
Right.
And I do not say that as a...
Me neither.
Is someone who's looking to try to start controversy or just disagree with what he's saying.
But I understand why he said it, but I wouldn't have said it. He says you can say whatever you want to say to the, when he gets to the players. I just wouldn't have said that, because at the end of the day, you've been saying it to your players and they haven't stood up. Your leaders have not been leading well enough for you to win.
Right.
Period, point blank.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at it, he says it's a challenge to your leaders, a challenge to, your team. They'll go out there. Well, No. I can see what he's saying. Okay, then. He's trying to get these guys hyped up. All right, the ball's on our court now. Now let's go out there and really show them what it
was.
Well, we've been saying that for the past 3 weeks.
For the past 2 years. Like, really. It's going to hit that it's us against the world again type of thing, which, Pat, I just messed up, I think. I hit the wrong button. Let me see if I can get Jim from Swarthmore up here. Jim, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, buddy? No, Jim. All right, let's go to Cisco and Bluebell. Cisco, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, guys, I'm not even going to ask you how you're doing. I know how you're doing.
We're doing good. We're getting by.
No, you're not. Well, you know what? I heard people complain about the draft picks, Howie's draft picks and so forth. But I have a different take here. I'm going to mention Arcega Whiteside, Andre Dillard, Sidney Jones. I don't think they're being coached up to be good draft picks. Why would you put your prize first-round pick in a position last week to play the right side instead of just putting another guy in there at the right tackle spot? You next year we're going to be wondering, what happened to Dillard? He's not playing that well. Did Doug Peterson and the gang blow his mind up this year?
I hope not. I don't know. Real quick, Cisco, I don't know why they didn't put Halapuli-Vaitai there to begin
with. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, you don't mess up your prize rookie. He was your first pick. Now you're making him go in there, lose confidence. Next year you're going to be wondering, what happened to this guy? You know what happened to him.
Yeah.
You know exactly what happened. And Sidney Jones was a shutdown corner in college. Shut down. What happened to him?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. And Cisco, thanks for the call. And Barrett, you brought that up before, didn't you? We were talking about Sidney Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got it. He's got to want it a little bit, man.
There's something there.
Right. You know, he was the best cornerback coming out in the draft. He played against Ross every day in practice. You know, he was an elite corner. He just didn't have it now. And I think it has a lot to do with, you know, the preparation of going out there to be great. You know, you have to prepare yourself to be great. You have to lift weights. You have to make sure that you're conditioning your body, putting your body in a position to go out there and be great. And I don't see that, you know, necessarily happening. Exactly, not just with him, with this team.
And what's point to?
Yo, the coaching, that's what I'm saying. So
yeah, it's scary.
And I mean, you gotta wear kids' gloves. These guys, we're gonna mess up the rookie, you know, first round draft choice psyche by putting, no, damn it, he's a grown man. He's a grown ass man. He ain't messing up no damn psyche. You go out there, you got your ass kicked. Pure point blank. You gotta get better. So now he knows if I'm gonna play on the right side, I gotta do more preparation. I gotta make sure that I'm ready to play. I gotta make sure that if they do put me in this position again, I won't get beat like that again. And then, you know, when I'm playing left tackle, I still gotta do what it takes. All this handling these guys with kids' glove, okay, you win some, you lose some, but you still go out there and you still fight, man. Stop treating these guys like they little kids, man. He'll be fine. You know what I'm saying?
As much as we grew up saying, oh, I'm never going to sound like my dad, my uncle, right. My whatever. Damn if we don't. Jim from Swarthmore, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's happening, Jim?
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, I have a somewhat different spin. I think the thing that bothered me most about yesterday actually took place last week. That was planned to see. And I want to ask Barrett a question. In your career, Barrett, have you ever seen an entire team, a defensive team, that was on a losing team, the Eagles were last week, a losing record, in a game that they were losing, the entire team went and celebrated? I've seen individuals, wide receivers, defensive backs, carrying on when they were losing 30 to nothing. But I have never seen an entire unit, except, you know, celebrating in that kind of a circumstance. Have you?
No, I haven't. No, I mean, you know, the old school players I play with, they'd have told us, go sit down somewhere. You know, what is all this? You celebrate when you win.
Can you imagine a Belichick team doing that?
No.
I mean, but here's my issue with this whole thing. I honestly believe that this team problem is far more than superficial or talent or physical. I think that they are living in an alternative universe. They still see themselves as Super Bowl champions. And they haven't made that transition yet to reality. I mean, I think the things that are happening here on the field yesterday and over this whole season, and even last year went back, it's indicative to me of people that have a disproportionate opinion of themselves.
Yes. They too highly of themselves.
Yeah, and you know, even they thought this game was over at halftime.
Yep.
Last week they're celebrating. I'm assuming they're celebrating because they felt they were going to win the game last week, come back and win. I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, that to me would be the only rationale why people would do that in that circumstance.
You know what, Jim?
Yeah.
You brought it on that phone call. So you know what I'm going to do? You're the Goldenberg's Peanut Chews giveaway. You're the best caller in the 12 p.m. hour, so you're going to win a tub of Goldenberg's Peanut Chews, serving fans delicious, chewy, chocolatey, bite-sized pieces loaded with crunchy peanuts. Jim, hold on 1 second, and Pat Egan will take care of you on that. Phew. Had to get that out of the way there, Barrett. That was a, but I think Jim feels the way a lot of us feel, and you know, there's going to be a lot more reaction. Doug Peterson, 610-632-0975. What'd you think about Doug? Who's to blame for this season? And I'm going to, when we come back, I got to talk a little bit about this Cyber Monday, Black Friday, all that type of stuff, and how I relate it to sports, and I need your answers on some questions that I have. Time at the Fanatic, 1240.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
12:50 here at the Fanatic Midday Show. Bob Cooney, Barrett Brooks, in for Anthony Gargano. Pat Egan behind the glass. Pat, we just had a great laugh at your expense that you have no idea about. But you suffice it to say, Barrett was picking on you a little bit. So,
kiss my ass.
So,
oh my goodness!
Those things happen. Oh well.
Oh, I can get through my day today.
Yeah, we're okay.
Bob just made my day. All I'm gonna say, Pat, you're my guy, man.
Yeah, we do. We love us some Egan, and we're gonna keep going tonight, me and you.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. We're gonna go over to Westbrook's show because you and I are neighbors.
Yeah, yeah. I'm right down the road.
That's right.
So yeah, we're going down. Make sure you come down, man. It's, you know, we're gonna have a great time there. Westbrook is gonna be dropping some knowledge. I might get on there a little bit to see if
there you go.
See if everybody sees the less that I know, but yeah, we'll see.
Nah, so we'll go up to PJ Wellhands tonight. Brian Westbrook's on at 6 o'clock, and we're just gonna go up and maybe I don't know, maybe a cocktail. I think we worked hard enough today to get one, Barrett.
After what I have to say today and all this stuff I'm going to say for the rest of the day, I'm going to need a cocktail.
Okay. I'm with you then. All right. So right now on the Comcast Business Hotline from the Philadelphia Inquirer.com is, if you don't stop talking to my ear, you're going to come in there and is Bob Ford. Bob, how are you today, buddy?
Pretty good, Bobby. You got to sleep in a little bit today, huh?
I did. I got an extra hour's sleep. I didn't have to get up until closer to 3:45.
That's excellent, Bob.
So you were going to bed, and I was in Miami after a night of partying, and I was getting up.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So we just listened to Doug Peterson's press conference. I don't know if you heard it much, Bob, but it was kind of baffling. Him basically saying that players are in the positions, they're doing what we tell them, but they're not making plays. It reeked a little bit of he doesn't think he has the talent to execute what he's giving to the team. I don't want to put, you know, words into your mouth about what he may or may not have meant, but just your overall evaluation of Doug Peterson, where he is now with this team, and is it a good thing moving forward?
Well, I did not get to hear the press conference. I'm in the beautiful Charlotte airport. This is such a glamorous life, you know.
Oh, Bob, by the way, real quick, happy birthday.
Oh, thanks, Tony. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. Birthday, man. Yeah, I forgot. I should.
I feel 5 years older after this trip.
Yeah, Charlotte's a good airport. You're okay. I like Charlotte airport.
Yeah, listen, I'm in the locker room, but I'm not in the locker room, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I mean by that. So I don't know how the team feels about Peterson. I thought the most distressing thing on Sunday yesterday was not necessarily that they lost. Obviously, it's a terrible loss, but I thought they were out.
Sure.
I thought the other team wanted it more. And this is a 2-9 team that's got nothing to play for. And to me, that's much more disturbing than, hey, you make a mental error or, hey, you make a physical error that gets you beat, you know, on a Sunday in the NFL. So to me, I would be concerned about that aspect of it if I were Doug Peterson. And that's the part yesterday that really, really bothered me.
And what bothers me, Bob, in watching him, and we're talking to Bob Ford from the PhiladelphiaInquirer.com, what really bothers me, Bob, is I haven't watched during a game and said, ooh, they made a really good adjustment there. Not that I can recall and point it to Doug Peterson and say he's done so. Am I missing something, or do you get that feeling also?
Well, whatever adjustments they've made, it hadn't worked. it seemed like Miami adjusted yesterday, and this is obviously Jim Schwartz's side of the ball. Miami adjusted yesterday to the pressure that the Eagles were getting in the first half. Three sacks, and I think 8 of the 11 quarterback hits came in the first half. And in the second half, I don't know whether the line stopped firing out. Barrett had probably a better view of it than I did, or if they just had to back off a little bit. This is a team that cannot run the ball. You know, they beat them running for, what, 63 yards yesterday or whatever. So it's not like you have to worry about a multi-dimensional offense. So the adjustment that was made yesterday that seemed to work was Miami's on offense and not the Eagles and the defense. On the other side of the ball, listen, and people don't want to hear it, they scored 31 points. You win a football game with 31 points.
Yep.
I mean, I cannot put this, as much as people, you know, want to, you know, nail the redheaded guy, I can't put this on Carson Wentz or the offense. I mean, that was a defensive letdown, and the defense has their guys now, so what's the excuse now?
Yeah, there's been a lot of people wondering if some kind of personnel move should be made, whether it's players, whether it's a coach, something. Is it too late for that? Is it useless to try to do something like that now, Bob?
To make an example of someone, I don't even need a personnel move, maybe starting lineup move. I'm telling you what, and I don't like to point fingers at one guy after that game, but Kenny Zerlinger would not be getting a lot of snaps for me after that game. So I don't know, maybe you can shake things up. Is it time, Bob, to say, hey, let's see if Dillard is going to be a left tackle? We got four games to take a really good look and evaluate him. Is it time to start doing that kind of stuff? And I think those are reasonable questions.
Well, Bob, you know, looking at, you know, point of finger and not necessarily understanding why they're so undisciplined and their lack of focus on doing things the right way. Do you think it's more so a coaching thing with the, you know, we all know that, you know, you don't run the ball because you don't call the run plays, and that has everything to do with the head coach. But when do you start looking at Coach Groh? When do you start looking at Press Taylor? When do you start looking at Carson Wentz as far as not giving these guys the proper fundamentals to even go out there and play, let alone the play calling?
Yeah, no, that's a very reasonable point. And as you know, there's always a dividing line between, you know, where does the coach stop and where does the player start, and are they simply not physically talented enough to take good coaching? I'm not sure where to come down on it right now. I don't think either side is doing a very good job. I do know, and Barrett, you know from being in locker rooms, there comes a point in seasons, whether it's a baseball season, a football season, a hockey season, whatever, where the team looks around and says to itself, maybe not out loud, we're not good enough.
Right.
And you look around and you say we're not good enough, then just that little extra edge, that little extra try, you don't even know that you're not doing it, but you stop doing it. And boy, I'll tell you what, that's kind of what I think I'm seeing.
Bob, I think we have to start to look big picture. As much as we're totally invested in what happened yesterday and the disappointment of losing to a team like that, I think that now we're getting to the point where we have to start looking bigger picture. So what I want to ask is, do you think this team needs an overhaul, a slight rebuild, a touch here and there? Where is this organization going right now in your mind?
Well, certainly the front office has something to answer for with its recent drafts that have not panned out terribly well, and with some of the free agent signings. You know, in 2017, they made a bunch of free agent signings, and they really did well with, like, every one of them. And this year, it's not been the case. They had some bad luck. Malik Jackson hurts himself. You know, he would have been a guy on the defensive lines you think would have really helped you, that kind of thing. But I think just the roster building is certainly in question. I have absolutely no expectation that the owner is going to change the general manager. I mean, could they do some sacrificial lambs and kick some scouts out, you know, reorganize that kind of stuff in the player personnel department? On the coaching side, could they make Mike Groh a sacrificial lamb? Listen, let's face it, Doug Peterson's the offensive coordinator of this team, just like Andy Reid was when he was here. So, I mean, to me, that would be cosmetic. But major overhaul, I don't expect that you're going to see it unless one thing, Bobby, unless one thing happens again. Unless they cough up another hairball against the Giants for the Redskins.
Ooh.
I mean, if this is one bad loss, okay. But if they quit again against a 2-9, 2-10, whatever they are team, then all bets are off.
So I hate to do this, and I'm really not this guy, but Doug Peterson goes 13-3 in Super Bowl year and could do no wrong. Take away that year, the rest of his years, he's two games under 500. Is Doug Peterson, in your eyes, closer to a guy that could be 13-3 more consistently, or is he a 500 coach?
I don't know. It hasn't been a fair playing field in some ways. His first season, that was a 4-12 team that was dead in the water, man, and they weren't doing anything. 2017, a little bit of lightning in a bottle. Everything sort of went their way. Last year, a whole bunch of injuries, really bad injuries. This year, same kind of thing. So I'm not sure we've seen a level playing field where he's got his guys, they are healthy, and he's got a full season. And I'm not trying to soft pedal this, but he could certainly make that argument, and his defenders could certainly make that argument right now until they lose to the Giants.
Right, right. But still, though, I mean, he's the head coach, but he's also the offensive coordinator. You know, I don't want to hear grow as far as being an offensive coordinator, because who calls the plays? Doug.
Right.
He calls the timing when they're playing these plays. I don't necessarily think that it's one of the things that they don't have the plays to call. They know exactly what they want to call. You can run the ball if you really want to run the ball. Do you think that he trusts Groh and being that little guy over his shoulder saying, hey, coach, we're throwing the ball too much. Let's get back to the run. We're averaging 5 yards a clip when we do run the ball. Give me an opportunity, man, to really be able to say in your ear, coach, can you run the ball right now? Can we run the ball? Please let us run the ball. Does he have that little guy that, you know, could tell him that like we had with a Frank Reich?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to be in the earphones between the press box and the sideline on Sundays, and I'm not. You know, he says the right things. Groh says the right things. But what's the results on the field telling us? The results on the field telling us is that there isn't that kind of collaboration that you would like to see, and there's not that sort of two ways of looking at things that you're getting just one point of view. So I don't disagree with you in that regard. And could a guy that's more to his liking – well, listen, Frank Reich ain't going to be available. So
right.
who's going to be if it's not Mike Groh? So I don't know the answer to that. I really don't think Jeff Lurie is going to change the head coach. You guys may differ on that, but you know what? How much time do you buy yourself when you hoist the trophy? I think it's more than 2 years.
Fair enough. We're talking to Bob Ford from the Inquirer on the Comcast Business Hotline. Last thing for you, Bob, from me. After every season, we always put a label on it. You know, 16 was Carson's rookie year, 17, obviously the Super Bowl, 18, the broken back, whatever it may be. We can always label, oh, yeah, that was the season of. When this one finally ends, what's the label that you put on it?
I just think the season of disappointment, because people came into this with such high expectations and maybe overly high expectations. And it was, you know, Carson Wentz is healthy and here we go. And I think there's been a little bit of a disappointment overall in that he does not appear to be that guy, or at least that guy yet. And he's in his fourth year, so when's it going to happen? So it's like, all right, who do we have? And there's a little bit of that sense in Los Angeles with the Jared Goff. There's certainly a sense in Tennessee, maybe as early as last year with Mariota. When you think you got that guy, when you think you answered the most important question in sports, and suddenly you've got doubt about it. I think that's more than a disappointment, but that's the way I would characterize the season right now.
Well, Robert, have a good rest of the day. Happy birthday. Celebrate the way you deserve to do so. And I will even toast you tonight when I get done working.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm going to celebrate by going to get in boarding group number 7 at gate C-19 right now.
I hope you have a carry-on bag, my brother.
See you, brother. Take care, guys.
All right, Bob, thanks. Bob Ford from the Inquirer. A lot of interesting thought there. You know, I think he was kind of thinking that we're riding the fire, Doug Peterson wagon a little bit. We're not doing that at all.
No, absolutely not.
I think the questions that need to be asked are surrounding the head coach.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.